Making a wrong turn at a major junction can have far-reaching consequences further down the road. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. You know, most of us want our decisions and our choices to turn out well. We realize that a bad decision or a wrong choice can have far-reaching consequences. I used to tell my two daughters that moving forward in life, they would make mistakes, but they needed to exercise providential care not to make a mistake that would affect them the rest of their lives. In just a moment, Kenneth cites an example of a nation at a crossroads and the choice it made in a program titled Going Forward.
Hello to all our friends who are listening in. I trust you have had a good weekend and are ready to go forward with the week ahead. Our theme for this series is called Going Forward, and it's about advancing along the path of life. In Psalm 16, in the last verse 11, you will find this line which will trigger off our thoughts on this subject of going forward in the path of life. Psalm 16, verse 11. You will show me the path of life. We all have an individual path of life to tread, but it is God who will show us the path of life, because our lives are in His hands. Won't you go to the one who knows best and who maps out the paths of our lives for Him to show you the path of life? Further up in the same psalm, in verse 7, it says, I will bless the Lord who has given me counsel. My heart also instructs me in the night seasons. The first part is something we are familiar with, at least in theory, that the Lord is the one who gives us counsel. But for that counsel to be taken on board and to have an impact on our lives requires the second part, which is less familiar. It says, my heart also instructs me in the night seasons. Teaching and learning is always a two-way process. We need not only to be instructed, but has it ever occurred to us that we also need to instruct ourselves? That is what learning is all about. We have to instruct ourselves through meditating, reflecting, and obeying so that His counsels for showing us the path of life actually shape the path of our lives. In advancing through the path of life, we encounter occasional crises, which may be in the form of crossroads or junctions, as well as dead ends, which are also sometimes called cul-de-sacs. We are going to deal first of all with crossroads or intersections or junctions. Crossroads represent choices in our lives. These are the major intersections or junctions in our path of life which require major decisions. And everyone wants to make decisions that turn out well or right. Missing or making a wrong turn at a major junction can have far-reaching consequences further down the road. You probably may have experienced making a wrong exit while driving on the expressway, or perhaps missing the right exit along the expressway. And you know what happens then. It's going to take a long while to get back on the right track again. In this first study of going forward when considering crossroads, we will be looking at two biblical examples. The first is a nation at the crossroads, and that is a negative example of a bad turn or a wrong choice. And secondly, we'll consider a personal example of a widow at the crossroad, which is a positive example of what a right turn and a good choice is. Let's now look at a nation at the crossroads. In the book of Numbers, chapter 13, this was Israel at the critical juncture of their history when they were poised to enter the promised land at the place called Kadesh Barnea. This is a corporate example involving Israel under the leadership of Moses. And Kadesh Barnea represented a landmark decision and milestone in the history of the nation of Israel for the wrong reasons. They were on the threshold of the promised land. It was a case of being so near and yet so far. Let's read from chapter 13 of Numbers in verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. Having been delivered from Pharaoh and led out of Egypt across the Red Sea, Israel had traveled through the wilderness and now found themselves poised on the edge of the wilderness of Zin and the wilderness of Paran, to the south of the Promised Land. Now came the time to enter in to possess the Promised Land. Notice from the verse that we have read in Numbers 13, verse 1, that it was God's order to have a reconnaissance mission and not their own idea. The whole object of sending this reconnaissance mission, as for all such missions in preparation for a major military operation, is not so much to find out if they should go ahead with the operation, as much as it is to find out how they should do it, the best way of approaching and attacking. So the purpose of sending out this reconnaissance mission team, comprising 12 representative leaders of every one of the 12 tribes of Israel, was to bring back an intelligence report so that they can plan on how best to approach and to attack. It was not for deciding whether or not they should go ahead or hold back. Verse 3, So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord. There it is again, it's by the command of the Lord, and not by their own initiative. All of them men who were heads of the children of Israel. And the list of names of the 12 representative leaders of each tribe who comprised that critical reconnaissance team were named. Amongst this list, only two names stand out in memory, that of Joshua and Caleb, whilst the names of the other 10 disappeared from the annals of Bible history because they died soon after that. We read of that in Numbers chapter 14, verse 37. Those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. This incident was so significant that it was recalled and referred to on a number of occasions subsequently. For example, you can read a short summary of it in Numbers chapter 32, when they finally made another major approach from the east of the Jordan after an almost 40-year detour. And when two of the tribes, namely Reuben and Gad, took the initiative to suggest that they would like to stake their claim on the territory that they had possessed so far east of the Jordan. This is what the aged Moses sternly reminded them about. He wasn't about to let the same mistake be repeated 40 years ago. And this is what he said in Numbers 32 verse 7. Now why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? Thus your fathers did when I sent them away from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger was aroused on that day, and he swore an oath, saying, Surely none of the men who came up from Egypt, from 20 years old and above, shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. So the Lord's anger was aroused against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone. That, in a nutshell, was what transpired at Kadesh Barnea, but recounted 40 years later. Now we're going to go back into Numbers chapter 13, because this was the original account of the incident as it transpired, where we want to draw important lessons about what really led to this bad or wrong corporate decision. In verse 25 of Numbers 13, And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told him and said, We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. They were a tribe of giants. And then in verse 29, a reference is made to the other tribes who lived there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, the Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. This was the collective report on the information that they had gathered from their reconnaissance mission. Notice that all 12 of the team agreed on these same facts and figures. The data and the information is the same. But here, the similarity ends, because there were radically differing interpretations of that same information. And this is what military or combat intelligence is all about. It's not just the information that is collected, but the interpretation of that information. If it's just a presentation of the facts and the figures and the data, the information, that will amount to not much more than a geography lesson. You can describe the hills, the mountains, the rivers, the lakes, the people. These might all be well and good for tourism, but certainly not for a military operation. The information gathered or collected is the what, but the interpretation that makes intelligence is the so what. And that's what is critical and of greatest value in planning a military operation. The overall mission is very clear. It's to move in to possess the promised land. That should not be in question. The purpose of the reconnaissance mission is to come back to provide not just information, but intelligence as to how best to go about fulfilling that overall mission. And the quality and the value of the intelligence depends very much on the quality and accuracy of the interpretation. And here we find the division into two camps, represented by two different voices. It's 2 versus 10. Once the common information was presented, it was Caleb who took the initiative to present his perception of the whole scenario, his intelligence report. Verse 30, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." He was the first to voice his perception, and it was a positive perception, and it should have held with the rest if they had the same affinity of spirit. But Joshua was the only other one who advocated this position. He was the one who eventually succeeded Moses as the leader who actually led the subsequent generation to take possession of the promised land. But on this occasion, we're not told that he actually spoke up. But we know that he advocated the same position because he was numbered together with Caleb. In the next chapter 14, we read in verse 6, "But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, 'The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them.'" The outcome was a polarization around two positions. It's two voices against the other 10. What we see here is this principle in action. Our perception and vision are always shaped by our disposition. Psalm 18 verses 25 and 26 say something along this line. "With the merciful, you will show yourself merciful. With a blameless man, you will show yourself blameless. With the pure, you will show yourself pure. And with the devious, you will show yourself shrewd." If you have ever wondered what those verses mean, they illustrate this principle, that perception and vision are shaped by one's disposition. So we have two voices, two positions here. One is of faith versus the other of fear. One is of the Spirit of God, the other is of the spirit of man or the flesh. And these two positions are best encapsulated by two phrases which occurred in their respective position statements or their intelligence reports. As we have just read in verse 30 in Caleb's statement, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." Notice that phrase, "we are well able." Verse 31, "But the men who had gone up with him said," that is the other 10, "we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land, which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." There's nothing that expresses this separation of positions clearer than these two short and stark statements. On the one hand, the voice of faith says, "We are well able." On the other hand, the voice of fear says, "We are not able." All 12 of them started with the same common set of data and information. They all saw the giants, the Anakims, as well as the fortified cities and the nature of the terrain. That's the what. The so what of intelligence comprises their interpretation of that information mainly in two areas. It is about how you read the ground or your conclusions concerning the terrain factors, as well as how you read the disposition of the enemy's forces. That is, what is your conclusion about the enemy's strength and disposition from the information that you have gathered? And this is where they differed radically. Caleb and Joshua saw the giants, but they also saw their God. And therefore, their conclusion was simply, "We are well able." The other 10 also saw the giants, but they also saw themselves as grasshoppers, because their thinking was centered on their own resources and abilities and not God's. They saw the same external odds, but they had opposite resources and responses, either in God or in themselves. So if their perception was colored by the fact that the giants were out there and we are grasshoppers, their inevitable conclusion would be, "We are not able," because it was premised on seeing themselves as grasshoppers. And eventually, that's how their enemies will see them too. So perception and vision are shaped by one's disposition. And on this occasion, the two voices of faith were not enough to carry the rest from a spirit of fear to faith. On one occasion, Jesus said to two blind men that he had encountered, "Do you believe that I'm able to do this?" This is in Matthew chapter 9, verses 28 and 29. If you're a blind person, and this is the Son of God that is coming your way, and if you believe that, you wouldn't just be begging for money or some other kinds of help. You would be single-minded about the one thing that you want above everything else, and that is to have your sight. So it's obvious what was on their heart and mind. They were absolutely clear about what they wanted. And this was what Jesus asked them. "Do you believe that I'm able to do this?" Notice he was not asking them if they believed that this could happen, that they would be healed, or that they would receive their eyesight. What he actually asked them was this: "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" So the focus was not just on the thing that is to happen, the outcome, but rather on the who, the person who is doing it. "Do you believe me? Do you believe me so that I am able to do this for you?" And he went on to say, "According to your faith, let it be to you." In this negative example of a corporate or collective decision that was made, we find that the dynamics of a group decision is dependent on the spiritual constitution of the members comprising the group. If there are fence-sitters, they can still be swayed either by a word of faith or by a word of fear. But if unbelief dominates the air, as in this instance, then it will be a difficult and uphill task to swing the vote. It has been well said that one with God is a majority. This is spiritually true, especially if you are working on your own although the odds may be stacked against you. But however, in a collective situation, this needs to be true and applied to everyone in the group. Everyone needs to be one with God. Otherwise, God's highest and best can still be undermined by the prevailing spirit of fear or unbelief. It was said by Ezekiel in Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 14, as well as verse 20, that even outstanding men of righteousness, such as Noah, Daniel, or Job, could only deliver themselves by their own righteousness in a land of persistent unfaithfulness and a perverse generation. And we find the same thing happening here. The key, therefore, lies in nurturing pervasive righteousness throughout the rank and file, so that the right choices and decisions will be forthcoming at a time when they are needed. This is the same as for raising children in the nurture and fear of the Lord, so that they are able to make the right choices and decisions on their own when they finally become independent. And I trust you have been refreshed by God's presence and reached by His Word.
All of us arrive at critical junctures when a decision determines our destiny. But as Ken reminded us, we think we make our decisions, but decisions also make us. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow for part two of Going Forward. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.